Tamara's excited babbling. The last human counterweight died when the Makkar died in battle, Aaron said. And we all know what happened before that. That's how the enemy of death killed his brother. I can't see anyone lining up for it.
I will, said Cole.
Aaron abruptly stopped talking, his face cycling through expressions. At first he looked incredulous, as though he suspected Cole of saying it as a joke, or just to be contrary. Then, when he realized Cole was serious, he looked horrified.
You can't, Aaron said. Didn't you hear anything I just told you? You could die.
Well, don't kill me, Cole said.
How about our goal is not to die? Both of us, together, not dying.
Aaron didn't say anything for a long moment, and Cole wondered if he was trying to think of a way to tell Cole that he appreciated the offer, but he had someone better in mind. It was an honor, like Tamara had said. Aaron didn't have to take Cole. Cole wasn't anything special. He was about to open his mouth and say all that when Aaron looked up. His eyes were suspiciously shiny, and for a second, Cole thought that maybe Aaron hadn't always been the popular guy who was good at everything. Maybe, back in the foster home, he'd been lonely and angry and sad. Like Cole.
Okay, Aaron said.
If you still want to.
When it's time, I mean.
Before Cole could say anything else, the door banged open and Tamara came in. Her face lit up when she saw Aaron. She ran over and gave him a hug that nearly knocked him off the couch.
Did you see Master Rufus's face? She said. He's so proud of you. And the whole assembly came out, even my parents, all of them cheering for you. That was amazing.
It was pretty amazing, Aaron said, finally starting to really smile. She hit him with a pillow.
Don't go getting a swelled head, she told him.
Cole met Aaron's eyes over the pillow, and they grinned at each other. No chance of that around here, he said. At that moment, from Cole's bedroom, the chaos-ridden wolf began to bark. Chapter 20. Tamara jumped up and looked around the room like she was expecting something to leap out at her from the shadows. Aaron's expression turned wary, but he stayed seated.
Cole, he said. Is that coming from your room?
Maybe,
said Cole, trying desperately to think of some explanation for the sound.
It's my ringtone?
Tamara frowned.
Phones don't work down here, Colum. And you already said you didn't have one.
Aaron's eyebrows shot up.
Do you have a dog in there?
Something crashed to the floor and the barking increased, along with a sound like nails scrabbling over stone.
What's going on?
Tamara demanded, walking to Cole's door and yanking it open. Then she screamed, throwing herself back against the wall. Oblivious, the wolf bounded past her out into the common room.
Is that a...
Aaron stood up, his hand unconsciously going to the band at his wrist, the one with the black void stone in it. Cole thought of the dark curling around the wolves the night before, taking them into nothingness. He ran as quickly as he could to block the pup with his body, his arms held out wide.
I can explain, he said desperately. He's not bad. He's just like a regular dog. That thing is a monster.
Tamara said, grabbing up one of the knives from the table.
Call, don't you dare tell me you brought it here on purpose.
It was lost, and whimpering out in the cold, Call said.
Good!
Tamara screamed.
God, Call, you don't think, you don't ever think. Those things, they're vicious, they kill people.
He's not vicious, Call said, sinking to his knees and seizing the pup by the ruff.
Calm down, boy,
he said with as much firmness as he could summon, bending so he could look into the wolf's face.
These are our friends.
The pup stopped barking, staring up at Call with kaleidoscopic eyes. Then it licked his face. He turned to Tamara.
See? He's not evil. He was just excited from being cooped up in my room. Get out of my way!
Tamara brandished her knife.
Tamara, wait!
Aaron said, coming closer.
Admit it. It is weird that it's not attacking Call. He's just a baby,
Call said.
And scared.
Tamara snorted. Call picked up the wolf and turned it on its back, rocking it like a baby. The wolf squirmed.
See?
Look at his big eyes.
You could get kicked out of school for having him, Tamara said. We could all get kicked out of school.
Not Aaron, Call said, and Aaron winced.
Call, he said. You can't keep him. You can't.
Call held the wolf more tightly.
Well, I'm gonna. You can't, said Tamara. Even if we let him live, we have to take him outside the magisterium and leave him. He can't be in here.
Then you might as well kill him, said Call, because he won't survive out there. And I won't let you take him. He swallowed.
So if you want him out, tell on me.
Go ahead. Aaron took a deep breath.
Okay. So what's his name?
Havoc, said Call immediately. Tamara lowered her hand to her side, slowly.
Havoc?
Call felt himself blush.
It's from a play my father liked. Cry, Havoc, and let slip the dogs of war. He's definitely, I don't know, one of the dogs of war.
Havoc took the opportunity to burp. Tamara sighed, something in her face softening. She reached out her other hand, the one without a knife, to stroke the pup's fur.
So, what does he eat?
It turned out that Aaron had a bunch of bacon in the back of the cold storage, which he was willing to donate to feed Havoc. And Tamara, once she'd been drooled on and watched a chaos-ridden wolf roll onto its back so she could pet its stomach, announced that they should all fill their pockets with anything vaguely meaty that they could get out of the refectory, including Isla's fish.
We need to talk about the wristband, though,
she said as she tossed a wadded-up ball of paper to Havoc, trying to get him to fetch. He took the paper under the table and began instead to tear off small pieces with his tiny teeth.
The one Call's father sent him.
Call nodded. In all the uproar about Aaron and Havoc, he'd managed to push the realization of what the onyx stone meant to the back of his mind.
It couldn't have belonged to Verity Torres, right?
He asked.
She was 15 when she died, Tamara said, shaking her head. But she left school the year before, so her wristband would be bronze year, not silver.
But if it's not hers, Aaron said, swallowing, not able to say the words.
Then it's Constantine Madden's, said Tamara, with tight practicality. It would make sense.
Call flashed hot and cold all over. It was exactly what he'd been thinking, but now that Tamara had said it out loud, he didn't want to believe it. Why would my father have the wristband of the enemy of death? How would he have it? How old is your father? He's 35, Cole said, wondering what that had to do with anything.
Basically the same age as Constantine Madden. They would have been at school together, and the enemy could have left his wristband behind when he escaped from the Magisterium.
Tamara pushed herself to her feet and started to pace.
He rejected everything about school. He wouldn't have wanted it. Maybe your father picked it up or found it somehow. Maybe they even knew each other.
There's no way. He would have told me, Cole replied, knowing even as he said it that it wasn't true. Alistair never talked about the Magisterium except vaguely, and to describe how sinister it was. Rufus said he knew the enemy, and that bracelet was supposed to be a message to Rufus, said Aaron. It had to mean something to your father and to Rufus. It would make more sense if they both knew him.
But what was the message? Cole demanded.
Well, it was about you, Tamara said. Bind his magic, right?
So they'd send me home, so I'd be safe.
Maybe, said Tamara. Or maybe it was about keeping other people safe from you.
Cole's heart gave a sick thump inside his chest. Tamara, said Aaron, you'd better explain what you mean.
I'm sorry, Cole, she said, and she really did look sorry. But the enemy invented the chaos ridden here at the Magisterium, and I've never heard of a chaos ridden animal being friendly to anyone or anything but another chaos ridden.
Aaron started to protest, but Tamara held up her hand.
Remember what Celia said that first night on the bus? About how there's a rumor that some of the chaos-ridden have normal eyes? And if someone was born chaos-ridden, then maybe that person wouldn't be blank inside. Maybe they'd seem normal. Like Havoc.
Call isn't one of the chaos-ridden, Aaron said loudly. That stuff Celia was saying about chaos-ridden creatures that look normal, there's no proof that's even real. And besides, if Call was chaos-ridden, he'd know. Or I'd know. I'm one of the Makaris, so I should know, right? He's not. He's just not.
Havoc bounded over to Call, seeming to sense that something was wrong. He whined a little, eyes pinwheeling. Alistair's words echoed in Call's mind.
Call, you must listen to me. You don't know what you are.
Okay, then. What am I? He asked, leaning against the wolf, pressing his face into the soft fur. But he could see in his friends' faces that they didn't know.
As the weeks wore on, they had no new answers, but it was easy for Cole to let the questions slip from his mind so he could concentrate on his studies. With Aaron not just training to be a mage, but also training to be a Makar, Master Rufus had to split his time. While they mostly trained together, Cole and Tamara were often on their own, researching magic in the libraries, looking up histories of the Second Mage War and looking at drawings of the battles, or photographs of the people in them, chasing around the various small elementals that populated the Magisterium for practice, and finally learning how to pilot a boat through the caverns. Sometimes when Master Rufus needed to take Aaron somewhere or do something that would last the whole day, Cole and Tamara would join up with another master. The excitement of Aaron being a Makar had been slightly overshadowed by the news that Master Lemuel was being forced to leave the Magisterium. Drew's accusations had been heard by the assembly, and they determined that Master Lemuel could no longer be trusted with students, despite his steadfast denials and Rafe's speaking up on his behalf. His apprentices were split up among the other masters, landing Drew with Master Milagros, Rafe with Master Rockmaple, and Laurel with Master Tanaka. Drew got out of the infirmary a week after the news about Master Lemuel broke. At dinner, he'd gone around the other tables, apologizing to all the apprentices. He apologized several times to Aaron, Tamara, and Cole. Cole thought of asking what Drew had been trying to tell him in the hallway that night, but Drew was seldom alone, and Cole didn't know quite how to phrase the question. Is there something wrong with me? Is there something dangerous about me? How could you possibly know what I don't? Sometimes, Cole felt desperate enough to want to write to his father and ask him about the wristband. But then, he'd have to confess that he'd hidden Alistair's letter from Rufus. And besides, he hadn't heard anything from his dad except another care package of gummy candies and a new wool coat arriving at Christmas. It had a card with it signed, "Love, Dad." Nothing else. Feeling hollow, Cole stuck the card away in his drawer with the other letters. Fortunately, Cole had something else that occupied a lot of his time. Havoc. Feeding a growing, chaos-ridden wolf and keeping him hidden took single-minded dedication and a lot of assistance from Tamara and Aaron. It also required overlooking Jasper's telling Cole that he smelled like hot dogs day after day as he snuck food out of the refectory in his pockets. Plus, there was the matter of sneaking out through the mission gate for regular walks. But as winter turned to spring, it was clear to Cole that Aaron, and even Tamara, had come to think of Havoc as their dog too. And he would often come back from the gallery to find Tamara curled up on the couch, reading, with the wolf resting on top of her feet like a blanket. Chapter 21. Finally, the weather became warm enough for them to start having their classes outside almost daily. One bright afternoon, Cole and Tamara were sent to the edge of the woods to study with Master Milagros's class while Rufus took Aaron for special training. They didn't go far from the magisterium gates, but enough greenery had sprung up to block most of the cave entrance from view. The warm air smelled of the rosemary, valerian, and deadly nightshade that grew on the grounds. And there was a rapidly growing pile of light jackets and coats on the ground as the apprentices dashed around in the sunlight, playing catch with balls of fire, using air to control the way they moved. Cole and Tamara joined in with enthusiasm. It was fun, focusing on lifting a flaming orb, then rocketing it between hands. Cole strained to get it close enough to his palms so that it almost touched, but didn't quite. Gwenda had burned herself once and was now being extra careful. Her ball of fire hovered more than moved. Although Cole and Tamara had come late, the exercise was enough like ones Master Rufus had made them practice, particularly the sand exercises which were forever burned into their minds, that they were able to get the hang of it quickly. "Very good," Master Milagros said, walking between them. She'd taken off her shoes and sloughed off her black uniform shirt, revealing a T-shirt with a rainbow on the front. "Now, I want you to create two balls. Split your focus." Cole and Tamara nodded. Splitting their focus was second nature, but some of the others were struggling. Celia managed it, so did Gwenda, but one of Jasper's orbs popped, singeing his hair. Cole snickered, earning a dark look. Soon, though, everyone was tossing two and then three balls of fire into the air, not quite juggling, but something that might have approximated a slow-motion version of it. After a few minutes of that, Master Milagros stopped them again. "Please choose a partner," she said. "The apprentice without a partner will practice with me. We're going to toss our ball to our partner and catch the ball our partner tosses to us. So extinguish all balls in your hands but one. Ready?" Celia tapped Call's sleeve shyly.
"Practice with me?" she asked.
Tamara sighed and went to practice with Gwenda, leaving Jasper to partner with Master Milagros, since Drew had complained of a sore throat and stayed in his room. Back and forth the fire went, searing through the lazy springtime air.
"You're really good at this,"
Celia said, beaming, as Call made the fire do a loop-the-loop before dropping it just above her hands. Celia was the sort of friendly person who handed out compliments easily. But it was still nice to hear, even if Tamara was rolling her eyes behind Celia's back. "All right," Master Milagros clapped her hands to get everyone's attention. She looked a little disgruntled. There was a burn in her sleeve where Jasper must have thrown a fireball too close.
"Now that you all are used to using air and fire together, let's add something even more difficult. Come this way."
Master Milagros led them down the hill to a stream that bubbled over rocks. Four thick oak logs bobbed in the water, clearly magicked to stay in place, since the current flowed around them. She pointed to the logs.
"You will climb onto one of those," she said. "I want you to use water and earth to balance yourself there, while keeping at least three fire orbs in the air."
There was a murmur of protest, and Master Milagros smiled. "I'm sure you can do it," she said, shooing the students toward a log. As Call moved forward, she put a hand on his shoulder.
"Call, I'm sorry, but I think you better stay here. With your leg, I don't think it's safe for you to do this exercise," she said quietly. "I've been thinking about a version that could suit you better. Let me get the others started, and I'll tell you about it."
Jasper, passing by on his way to the stream, looked over his shoulder and smirked. Call felt a dull red fury bubble up in his stomach. Suddenly, he was back in gym class in sixth grade, sitting on the bleachers while everyone else climbed ropes, or dribbled basketballs, or bounced up and down on the mats.
"I can do it," he told her.
Master Milagros stepped toward the bank of the stream, her bare feet sinking in the mud. She smiled.
"I know, Call, but the exercise is going to be very difficult for all the apprentices, and it would be even harder for you. I think it's more than you're ready for."
So Call watched as the other apprentices waded or clumsily levitated to their logs, wobbling as Master Milagros released the magic that had been holding the wood in place. He could see the strain on their faces as they tried to move the log against the current, stay standing, and levitate a ball of fire. Celia fell almost immediately, hitting the stream, soaking her uniform, and laughing all the while. It was a hot day, and Call bet splashing in the water felt pretty good. Jasper, surprisingly, seemed good at the exercise. He managed to lever himself up on his log and stay standing as he conjured his first ball of fire. He tossed it between his hands, smirking at Call, making Call think of what he'd said in the refectory.
"If you could ever learn to levitate yourself, maybe you wouldn't slow down your teammates so much, limping along after them."
Call was a better mage than Jasper. He knew he was, and he couldn't stand that Jasper thought otherwise. Giggling, Celia pulled herself back up onto her log, but her feet were wet, and she slipped off again almost immediately. She plunged back into the water, and Cole, seized by an impulse he couldn't control, dashed forward and hopped up onto the abandoned log. After all, he'd skateboarded before, badly, he admitted. But he'd done that, and he could do this.
"Cole!" cried Master Milagros.
But he was already halfway across the stream. It was much harder than it had looked from shore. The log rolled under his feet, and he had to throw his hands out, bracing himself with earth magic to keep his balance. Celia surfaced in front of him, tossing back her wet hair. Seeing Cole, she gasped. Cole was so startled that his magic deserted him. The log rolled forward. Celia dove for the bank with a little shriek, and Cole's bad leg went out from under him. He pitched forward and landed in the water. The stream was black, icy cold, and deeper than he'd imagined. Cole twisted around, trying to swim for the surface, but his foot was wedged between two stones. He kicked desperately, but his bad leg wasn't strong enough to free the good one. Pain shot up his side as he tried to pull himself free, and he screamed. Silently, underwater, bubbles escaping his lips. Suddenly, there was a hand circling his upper arm, pulling him up. There was more pain as his foot pulled free from the stream bed, and then he was out of the water, gasping. The person who'd grabbed him was splashing through the stream, and Cole could hear the other apprentices yelling and calling out as he was tossed onto the bank, coughing and spitting water. He looked up and saw angry brown eyes and dripping wet black hair.
"Jasper?"
Cole said in disbelief, then coughed again, bringing up a mouthful of water. He was about to turn aside and spit it out when Tamara suddenly appeared, dropping down next to him on her knees.
"Cole? Cole, are you okay?"
Cole swallowed the water, hoping it didn't have tadpoles in it.
"Fine,"
he croaked.
"Why did you have to show off like that?"
Tamara asked angrily.
"Why are boys always so dumb? After Master Milagros specifically told you not to. If it hadn't been for Jasper, he'd be fish food,"
Jasper said, squeezing water out of a corner of his uniform.
"Well, I wouldn't go quite that far," said Master Milagros. "But Cole, that was very, very foolish."
Cole looked down at himself. One of his pants legs was torn. His shoe was missing, and blood trickled down his ankle. At least it was his good leg, he thought, so no one could see the twisted-up mess his other one was.
"I know," he said.
Master Milagros sighed.
"Can you stand?"
Cole tried to rise to his feet. Instantly, Tamara was next to him, offering an arm to lean on. He took it, straightened, and yelped as pain shot through him. His right leg felt as if someone had shoved a knife into his ankle, a hot, sickening pain. Master Milagros bent down and touched cool fingers to Cole's ankle.
"Not broken, but a bad sprain," she said after a moment. She sighed again. "Class is over for the afternoon. Cole? Let's get you to the infirmary."
The infirmary turned out to be a large, high-ceilinged room entirely free of stalagmites, stalactites, or anything that bubbled, dripped, or smoked. There were long lines of beds made up with white sheets, arranged as though the masters expected a large quantity of wounded children might be brought there any minute. At the moment, there was nobody but Cole. The mage in charge was a tall, red-haired woman who had a snake curled around her shoulders. Its pattern changed as it moved, turning from leopard spots to tiger stripes to wobbly pink dots.
"Put him over there," the woman said, pointing grandly as the apprentices carried Call in on a stretcher made of branches,
which Master Milagros had created. If Call's leg hadn't hurt so much, it would have been interesting to watch her use earth magic to snap the branches together and bind them with long, flexible roots. Master Milagros supervised as they deposited Call on a bed.
"Thank you, students," she said, as Tamara hovered anxiously. "Now, let's go and let Master Amaranth get to work."
Call propped himself up on his elbows, ignoring the shooting pain in his leg.
"Tamara."
"What?"
She turned around, dark eyes wide. Everyone was looking at them. Call tried to communicate with her with his eyes.
"Look after Havoc. Make sure he gets enough food."
"He's going cross-eyed," Tamara said to Master Amaranth, worriedly. "It must be the pain. Can't you do anything?"
"Not with all of you here. Shoo! Shoo!"
Amaranth waved a hand, and the apprentices hurried out with Master Milagros, Tamara pausing in the doorway to shoot another worried look at Call. Call flopped back onto the bed, his mind on Havoc, as Master Amaranth cut away his uniform, showing purple bruising down the expanse of his leg. His good leg. For a moment, panic rose in his chest, making him feel as though he was choking. What if he'd managed to make it so that he couldn't walk at all? The master must have seen some of the fear in his expression, because she smiled, taking a roll of moss out of a glass jar.
"You're going to be fine, Callum Hunt. I've fixed worse injuries than this."
"So, it's not as bad as it looks?" Call ventured.
"Oh, no," she told him. "It's just as bad as it looks. But I'm very, very good at my job."
Somewhat comforted and deciding he'd be better off not asking any more questions, Call let her cover his leg in bright green moss, and then pack the whole thing with mud. Finally, she gave him a drink of some milky liquid that took away most of the pain and made him feel a bit like he was floating up toward the ceiling of the cave, as though the wyvern breath had hit him after all. Feeling very foolish, Call slipped off to sleep.
"Call?" A girl whispered, very close to his ear, making his hair move and tickle his neck.
"Call! Wake up!"
Then another voice. A boy's voice this time. "Maybe we should come back. I mean, doesn't sleep help healing or something?"
"Yeah, but it doesn't help us."
The first voice said again, louder this time and grumpier.
"Tamara."
Call opened his eyes. Tamara and Aaron were there, Tamara seated beside him on the bed, gently shaking his shoulder. Aaron held up a drooling, panting, tail-wagging Havoc. He had a makeshift rope leash around his neck.
"I was going to walk him," Aaron said. "But since there's no one but you in the infirmary, we thought we'd bring him for a visit first."
"We brought you some dinner from the refectory, too,"
Tamara said, pointing at a napkin-covered plate on the nightstand.
"How are you doing?"
Call moved his leg experimentally, within the mud cast. It didn't really hurt anymore.
"I feel like a moron."
"It wasn't your fault," Aaron said at the same time that Tamara said,
"Well, you should."
They looked at each other, and then at Call.
Sorry, Cole, but it wasn't your best idea, Tamara said. And you totally stole Celia's log. Not that she won't like you anyway.
What? She doesn't, Cole protested, horrified.
Does too.
Tamara grinned.
You could hit her on the head with a log and she'd still be all, Cole, you're so good at this magic stuff.
She looked over at Aaron, who had an expression on his face that told Cole he agreed with Tamara and thought it was hilarious.
Anyway, Tamara said, we just don't want you to get crushed under a log. We need you.
That's right, Aaron agreed. You're my counterweight, remember?
Only because he volunteered first, Tamara said. You should have held auditions.
Cole had been worried that Tamara might be jealous when she found out Aaron had picked Cole as his counterweight. But mostly, she just seemed to think that, as much as she liked Cole, Aaron could probably have aimed higher.
I bet Alex Strike is still available. He's cute, too.
Whatever, said Aaron, rolling his eyes. I didn't want Alex. I wanted Cole.
I know, Tamara said.
He'll be good at it, she added unexpectedly, and Cole flashed them a grateful smile. Even flat on his back with his leg wrapped in mud, it felt good to have friends.
And here I was worried you were going to forget about Havoc, Cole said.
No chance of that, said Aaron cheerfully. He ate Tamara's boots.
My favorite boots.
Tamara swatted lightly at Havoc, who dodged away, scooted toward the door, and looked pitifully back at Cole in the bed. A small whine rose from his throat.
I think he wants to go for his walk now, Cole said. I'll take him.
Aaron jogged over to the door and looped the free end of the rope around his wrist. No one's in the corridors right now because it's dinner time. I'll be right back.
If you get caught, we'll pretend we don't know you.
Tamara called good-naturedly as the door swung shut behind him. She reached for the plate on Cole's nightstand and yanked off the napkin.
Yummy lichen, she said,
balancing the plate on Cole's stomach.
Your favorite kind.
Cole picked up a dried vegetable chip and bit into it thoughtfully.
I wonder if we're going to all be so used to lichen that when we get back home, we won't want pizza or ice cream.
I'll wind up in the woods eating moss.
Everyone in your town will think you're crazy.
Everyone in my town already thinks I'm crazy.
Tamara pulled one of her braids around and fingered the end of it thoughtfully.
Are you going to be okay, going home for the summer?
Cole looked up from his lichen.
What do you mean?
Your father, she said. He hates the magisterium so much, but you don't. At least I don't think you do. And you're going to come back next year. Isn't that exactly what he didn't want?
Cole didn't say anything.
You are coming back next year, aren't you?
She leaned forward, worried.
Cole?
I want to, he burst out. I want to, but I'm afraid he won't let me. And maybe there's a reason he won't. But I don't want to know it. If there's something wrong with me, I want Alistair to keep it to himself.
There's nothing wrong with you except that you broke your leg, said Tamara.
But she still looked anxious. And I'm a show-off, Cole said, trying to lighten the mood. Tamara threw a piece of lichen at him and they talked for a while about how everyone was reacting to Aaron's new celebrity status, including Aaron. Tamara was concerned about him, but Cole assured her Aaron could handle it. Then, Tamara started to tell him about how excited her parents were to have her in the same group with the Makar. Which was good, because she wanted them to be proud of her, and bad,
because it meant they were even more concerned than usual that she behave in an exemplary manner at all times. And their idea of exemplary didn't always match up with hers.
"Now that there's a Makar, what does it mean for the treaty?"
Call asked, thinking of Rufus's speech and the way the assembly members had reacted to it at the meeting.
"Nothing right now," Tamara said. "No one would want to move against the enemy of death while Aaron is so young. Well, almost nobody. But once the enemy hears about him, if he hasn't already, who knows what he'll do?"
After a few minutes of talking, Tamara glanced at her watch.
"Aaron's been gone a long time," she said. "If he's out there any longer, dinner will be over, and he'll get caught coming back through the corridors. Maybe I should go check on him."
"Right," said Call. "I'll go with you.
Is that a good idea?"
Tamara raised an eyebrow, looking at his leg. It did seem pretty bad, wrapped up in moss and sealed with mud. Call wiggled his toes experimentally. "Nothing hurt." Call swung his legs over the side of the bed, sending splintering cracks through his mud-moss cast. "I can't sit here any longer. I'm going stir-crazy. And my leg itches. I want to get some air."
"Okay. But we're going to have to go slow, and if anything hurts, you've got to rest, and then go right back."
Call nodded. He pulled himself to his feet, using the bedpost. As soon as he was standing, the cast broke completely in half and fell away, leaving his calf bare under his sliced-up pants leg.
"That's a good look for you," said Tamara, heading for the door.
Call quickly yanked on his socks and boots, which had been shoved under his bed. He tucked the individual pieces of his pants into his socks so they wouldn't be flapping around, and picked up Miri, sliding her through his belt. Then he followed Tamara out into the hall. The corridors were quiet, as the students were all in the refectory. Call and Tamara tried to make as little noise as possible as they made their way to the mission gate. Call felt wobbly. Both his legs hurt a little, although he wasn't going to tell Tamara that. He thought he must look pretty bizarre, with his pants cut open from the knee down and his hair sticking up all over the place. But fortunately, there was no one to see him. They found the mission gate and slipped silently out into the darkness. The night was warm and clear, the moon out, outlining the trees and the paths around the magisterium.
"Aaron!"
Tamara called in a low voice.
"Aaron? Where are you?"
Call turned around, scanning the woods. There was something a little creepy about them. The shadows thick between the trees, the branches rattling in the wind.
"Havoc!" he called.
There was a silence. And then Havoc burst out from between the trees, coruscating eyes whirling like fireworks. He dashed up to Call and Tamara, his makeshift rope leash dragging on the ground behind him. Call heard Tamara give a little gasp.
"Where's Aaron?"
she asked. Havoc whimpered and reared up, pawing at the air. He was practically vibrating all over, his fur standing up, his ears swiveling wildly. He whined and danced toward Call, pushing his cold nose into Call's hand.
"Havoc."
Call dug his fingers into the wolf's ruff, trying to get him to calm down.
"Are you all right, boy?"
Havoc whined again and danced away, wriggling out of Call's grasp. He jogged toward the forest, then paused and looked over his shoulder at them.
"He wants us to follow," said Call. "Do you think Aaron is hurt?"
Tamara asked, looking around wildly.
"Could an elemental have attacked him?"
"Come on,"
Call said, starting across the dark ground, ignoring the twinge in his legs. Havoc, assured that they were behind him, raced off like a shot, darting between trees like a brown blur in the moonlight. As fast as they could go, Tamara and Cole followed. Chapter 22 Cole's legs hurt. He was used to one of them aching, but both of them together was a new sensation. He didn't know how to balance his weight, and although he'd picked up a stick as he walked through the forest and was using it when he felt like he was going to fall, nothing helped the way his muscles burned. Havoc was leading the way, with Tamara well ahead of Cole, looking back regularly to make sure that he was still behind her, and occasionally slowing impatiently. Cole wasn't sure how far they'd gone. Time was starting to blur with the rising pain. But the farther from the Magisterium they got, the more alarmed Cole became. It wasn't like he didn't trust Havoc to lead them to Aaron. No. What worried him was how Aaron could have come so far. And why? Had some enormous creature like a wyvern flown off with him in its claws? Had Aaron gotten lost in the woods? No, not lost. Havoc would have led him out. So what had happened? They crested a hill, and the trees began to thin all the way down to a highway that snaked through the forest. On the other side, another hill rose to block out the horizon. Havoc barked once and started down. Tamara turned and jogged to Cole.
"You've got to go back," she said. "You're hurting, and we have no idea how much farther away Aaron could be. You should head to the Magisterium and tell Master Rufus what happened. He can bring the others."
"I'm not going back," Cole said. "Aaron's my best friend, and I'm not leaving him if he's in danger."
Tamara put her hand on one hip.
"I'm his best friend."
Cole wasn't sure how the whole best friend thing worked.
"Fine, then I'm his best friend who isn't a girl."
Tamara shook her head.
"Havoc is his best friend who isn't a girl."
"Well, I'm still not leaving," Cole said, shoving his stick in the dirt. "I'm not leaving him, and I'm not leaving you. Besides, it makes sense for you to go back, not me."
Tamara looked at him. Her eyebrow quirked.
"Why?"
Cole said what they'd probably both been thinking, but neither had wanted to say out loud.
"Because we're going to get in a lot of trouble for this. We should have gone to Master Rufus the second Havoc showed up without Aaron."
"We didn't have time," Tamara argued. "And we would have had to tell them about Havoc."
"We are going to have to tell them about Havoc. There's no other way to explain what happened. We're going to get in trouble, Tamara. It just depends how much. For having a chaos-ridden animal, for not running for the masters the second something happened to the Makar, for everything, big trouble. And if it's going to land on one of us, it should be me."
Tamara was silent. Cole couldn't read her expression in the shadows.
"You're the one who has parents who care if you stay at the Magisterium, and who care how you do here," he said, feeling weary.
"Not me.
You're the one who scored high in the trial."
"Not me."
"You're the one who wanted help sticking to the rules and not cutting corners. Well, this is me helping. You belong here."
"I don't."
"It matters to you if you get in trouble. It doesn't matter to me. I don't matter."
"That's not true," Tamara said.
"What isn't?"
Cole realized he'd made quite a speech, and wasn't sure which part she was objecting to.
"I'm not that person. Maybe I wanted to be, but I'm not. My parents raised me to get things done no matter what. They don't care about rules, just appearances. This whole time I've been telling myself that I'm going to be different from my parents, different from my sister, be the one who stuck to the straight and narrow. But I think I had it all wrong, Cole. I don't care about rules or appearances. I don't want to be the person who just gets things done. I want to do the right thing. I don't care if we have to lie or cheat or cut corners or break rules to do it.
He stared at her, dazzled.
Seriously?
Yes,
Tamara told him.
That is so cool, Cole said.
Tamara started laughing.
What is it? Nothing. You just always surprise me.
She tugged at his sleeve.
Come on, then.
They went down the hill quickly, Cole stumbling a few times and fetching up hard against his walking stick, once nearly impaling himself. When they reached the highway, they found Havoc waiting by the side of the road, panting anxiously as a truck rumbled by. Cole found himself staring after it. It was strange to be near cars after so long. Tamara took a deep breath.
Okay, no one's coming, so let's go.
She darted across the highway, Havoc at her heels. Cole bit his lip hard and went after them, every running step sending jolts of pain up his leg and through his side. By the time he reached the far side of the road, he was soaked with sweat. Not from running, but from pain. His eyes stung.
Cole!
Tamara put her hand out, and the earth stirred under their feet. A moment later, a thin jet of water sprang up, as if she'd knocked over a fire hydrant. Cole put his hands in the water and splashed his face as Tamara cupped her palms and drank. It was good to stand still. Just for a moment, until his legs stopped shaking. Cole offered Havoc some of the water, but Havoc was pacing back and forth, looking between them and what appeared to be a dirt road in the distance. Cole dried his face on his sleeve and set off after the wolf. He and Tamara walked in silence. She had dropped back to match her pace to his, and also, he imagined, because she was probably getting tired, too. He could tell she was as anxious as he was. She was chewing on the end of one of her braids, which she did only when she was really panicked.
Aaron will be okay,
he told her as they joined up with the dirt road and started along it. Hedges rose on either side.
He's a Makar.
So was Verity Torres, and they never found her head, said Tamara, apparently not a believer in the whole staying positive thing.
They went on a little farther, until the road narrowed to a path. Cole was breathing hard and trying to pretend he wasn't, hot pain shooting up his legs with every step. It was like walking on broken glass, except the glass seemed to be inside him, stabbing from his nerves into his skin.
I hate to say this, Tamara told him, but I don't think we can stay out in the open like this. If there's an elemental up ahead, it will spot us. We're going to have to stick to the woods.
The ground would be more uneven there. She didn't say it. But she had to know Cole would go slower, and it would be harder for him, that he was more likely to trip and fall, especially in the dark. He took a shaky breath and nodded. She was right. Being out in the open would be too dangerous. It didn't matter if the going was harder. He'd said he wasn't leaving her or Aaron, and he'd stick to his word. Step by painful step, his hand going to brace against the trunks of trees, they followed Havoc as he led them on a path parallel to the dirt road. Finally, in the distance, Cole spotted a building. It was massive and looked abandoned. The windows boarded up, and the black carpet of an empty parking lot spread out in front of it. A sign towered over the nearby trees, picturing a huge, unlit bowling ball and three pins. Mountain Bowling, it said. It looked like the sign hadn't been lit in years.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Call asked, wondering if the pain was making him delusional. But why would he dream up something like that?
Yeah, Tamara said, an old bowling alley. There must be a town not too far from here. But how could Aaron be there?
And don't say something like working on his score or maybe he's in a bowling league or something like that. Be serious. Call leaned against the rough bark of a nearby tree and resisted the urge to sit down. He was afraid he wouldn't be able to get up again.
I'm serious. It might be hard to tell in the dark, but I have my most super serious face on.
He'd wanted the words to come out light, but his voice sounded tense. They crept closer. Call, straining to see if light spilled out from beneath any of the doors or the boards over the windows. They made their way around to the back of the building. It was even darker there, the bowling alley blocking the street lamps along the distant road. There were dumpsters back there, looking dusty and empty in the faint moonlight.
I don't know,
Call began, but Havoc jumped, pawing at the wall and whimpering. Call craned his neck back and looked up. There was a window above their heads, almost completely boarded over, but Call thought he could see a little bit of light between the boards.
Here.
Tamara pushed at one of the dumpsters, inching it toward the wall. She clambered on top of it, then reached down to help Call up after her. He dropped his walking stick and scrambled over the side, hoisting himself entirely with his arm strength, his boots bumping the metal, making an echoing noise.
Shh, Tamara whispered. Look.
There was definitely light coming from between the boards. They were held to the wall by very large, very sturdy-looking nails. Tamara looked at them dubiously.
Metal is earth magic, she began.
Call slid Miri from his belt. The blade seemed to hum in his hand as he worked the tip under one of the nails and pulled. The wood parted, like paper, and the nail rattled down onto the lid of the dumpster.
Cool!
Tamara whispered. Havoc leaped onto the trash bin as Call cut the rest of the nails free and threw the wood aside, revealing the smashed remains of a window. The glass panes were missing, along with the muntins. Beyond the window, he could see a dimly lit corridor not far below. Havoc wiggled through the gap, dropped the few inches to the hallway floor and turned around, looking expectantly at Tamara and Call. Call slid Miri back into his belt.
Here we go,
he said, and climbed through the window. The fall was slight, but still jarred his legs. He was wincing as Tamara joined him, landing noiselessly despite her boots. They stared around them. It looked nothing like the inside of a bowling alley. They were in a hallway whose floor and walls were made of blackened wood, as though there'd been a fire. Call couldn't explain exactly how, but he felt the presence of magic. The air of the place seemed heavy with it. The wolf set off down the corridor, scenting the air. Call followed him, his heart thudding with dread. Whatever he'd imagined when they first set off after Havoc from the mission gate, he'd never imagined they'd wind up in a place like this. Master Rufus was going to kill them when they got back, He was going to hang them up by their toes and make them do sand exercises until their brains bled out their noses. And that was if they managed to save Aaron from whatever had him. If they didn't, Master Rufus was going to do much worse than that. Call and Tamara stayed dead silent as they passed by a room with its door slightly ajar.